Top 5 Face-Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
This is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world rankings of everything. What are we ranking today, Hurst?
Today, we're going to be ranking the top 5 reboots / remakes.
It's coming right up after this.
There's more than 5, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the top 5 face-off. Actual facts. It's the top 5 face-off. Facts are exact. Top 5 face-off. Top 5 face-off. Official world ranking. What's next? You decide.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, rankers. Welcome back, and if it's your first time, welcome to the show.
Hello.
For any of our new rankers, Squirrel, why don't you tell them what we do here?
This is Top 5 Face-Off, where we rank the top 5 in any given subject, which is suggested to us by our Patreons. Today we are ranking reboots and remakes, and we will let you know what the 5 best ones are. And then you get to go to our website and vote to tell us which one of us was correct.
Indeed. We will also explain in some detail what makes a reboot or a remake, because we had to clarify pretty hard throughout the week what counted.
There's been some discussion.
But I'm happy with my list now.
Yes,
we might indeed end up arguing, but you know, that's half the fun of the show.
We might. But we don't want to dive straight into that like some sort of party ruffian, Hurst.
Heck no.
Heck no.
We're British, don't you know?
Yes, darling.
How's the weather been?
The weather has been delightful, Hurst. It has been sunny. Although, interesting, this morning there was frost on my car, which is a bit weird at 6:30, but it's been a lovely day again. And it continues to be lovely. Long may it continue.
Funny you say that. I sensed there was a frost, so I brought my lemon plant back in, thinking,
lemon plant watch.
Fortunately, when I looked out the window this morning, I saw the frost. I was pretty well pleased with myself. But yeah, equally, the weather has been lovely here. And that segues fantastically into what's been making me feel old recently.
Oh, go on.
Well, just this week, I looked out the window and I saw it was sunny. And I looked across and I saw there was a breeze rustling through the trees. Do you know what my first thought was?
Some form of poem by the sound of it.
No, it was, I reckon I could get 5 washes on and dry today.
Fuck. Holy shit, how have you got 5 washes? Have you got 5 washes worth of dirty clothes currently in your house? Or?
Well, you include any bedding and stuff. We sleep in different beds and it's pretty much a once a week jobby and some things just get left over. So I was like, yeah, I reckon I could do 5.
You clean your bedclothes once a week?
We've got 4 dogs. They sleep on the bed.
Yeah, of course. Us, me too. 100%.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. So that's what's been making me feel old. But anyway, it was. I didn't get 5 done. I got 3 done because, you know, life came along and took its toll.
Yeah, welcome to Top 5 Face-Off, the UK's number 1 washing and drying podcast.
So yeah, anyway, that's what's been making me feel old, and that's what's been now letting everyone else think I'm old, because I've just had a good old ramble about my washing.
Let's talk about Val Kilmer real quick.
Oh, man.
Val Kilmer very sadly died earlier this week, last week, 1st of April, he died in the world's most, I hope this is an April Fool's joke headline.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Right. Val Kilmer, obviously we have talked about Top Gun on this very podcast in some detail, and he was great in that. He was great in many, many things. Tombstone, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He is a legend and was, you know, in every good film that I watched when I was younger. Like, he was brilliant.
Yeah, wasn't he like the youngest ever person to be accepted at like New York School of Acting or something?
Excellent.
He's one of those great actors that is just massively underrated. You don't put him in there with the likes of a De Niro or a Pacino, but actually he was tremendous at whatever role he played.
Mm.
And he was responsible for the greatest comeback in movie history when he tells Tom Cruise he doesn't like him. Tells Maverick, I don't like you because you're dangerous. And Maverick's like, yeah, that's right, Iceman. I am dangerous. And Kilmer just stares him in the eye and just cracks his teeth together. It's this kind of, wow, that's just, he has destroyed him there. to use some hyperbole off of the internet.
Those things you hate, yes.
That was a situation, but he did destroy him. That was the biggest win in any argument that ever happened, I think.
Yeah.
I forget the Malcolms on that, but it was one of the top five, I think. Top five comebacks.
One day, maybe. Top five comebacks. Let us know, patrons, if that's what you want to hear. 65 years old, Hurst.
Yeah.
Very sad. May he rest in peace, of course.
Yeah. Respect, Ralph.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit. You can be mine.
I've had a very chill and non-old feeling week, so I haven't got anything gripping my shit. I do have something to talk about last week's podcast, but is anything gripping your shit before or going on? We haven't even had that yet, right? He's got his phone out, Ranker. Something's coming.
You know what's been gripping my shit this week?
I don't.
Films are too long, mate. That's what's happened. Films are too long now.
Mate. Are you going to talk about needing to get up to go for a piss? Is this
no, no, it's just like 2.5 hours. And people are like, yeah, that's normal. And they bring out the first part of Wicked, and that's the best part of 3 hours. Why does everything have to be so bloody long? Stop it, filmmakers. Keep it to 2 hours unless it's an epic, at which point, fine.
All right.
So that's what's been gripping my shit.
Top five movies under 90 minutes, maybe, in our future.
I see.
There's no Patreons. Movies need to be shorter so we can watch them quicker.
Yes.
Mm.
You don't need to drag it out. That's the thing. Get to the point.
Right. No exposition.
Yeah, and it's like watching any kind of reality show, any singing talent show or whatever. It's like the amount of fluff and nonsense they feel they need to add in to pad out the show. It's like, come on. You could fit in another two or three good singers in that time.
Hurst, we're literally in the section of our podcast where we pad it out.
Yeah, well, it's a bit different than that.
I tell you what, I kind of agree with you somewhat, but in a different medium. What grips my shit is books that have really long chapters.
Yeah.
Because when I'm reading a book, I like to read to the end of the chapter and then stop. If books have a really long chapters, I don't want to read all that. Maybe it's nighttime, or maybe I'm arriving where I'm going on the train, or whatever the hell. Yeah, books with long chapters, they need shorter chapters. Books without chapters at all, rage. Get in the bin. How do I know when to stop reading?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
No, I'm totally with you there.
I can't make these decisions. I want like 5, 6, 7 minute chapters. Yeah. That's about right for
me.
I don't mind how long the book is because, you know, it's just the chapters, but the book can be as long as it like. I'm quite a fan of a long tale.
Interesting that you say that.
Oh.
Because do you know what's been going on? The big news this week is there's been a new Guinness World Record.
For book length?
No, it's not book length, no. For long tales. This happened in Minnesota. It's the official new world record for longest tail on a cat.
Oh.
It's not a silver Maine Coon as it would be, because you can count they're massive.
Oh, for sure.
But its tail is 18.5 inches long. And that surpasses the previous record, which was only 16.07 inches. That is an absolute annihilation of the record. That's considerable. It's a 2-year-old cat called Mr. Pugsley Adams. And I have sent you a picture, which we will pop on the website for our rankers to enjoy.
I love it when you say that, because that's really fucking hard. Crap tons. I've just looked at the picture. That's absurd.
And it's not just long, it's powerful fluffy as well, so.
It is mad fluffy. So I like the way that the picture you sent has an arrow in case I'm confused yeah. about which of these cats is the world record holding cat.
I enjoyed the arrow as well.
That's some fascinating cattail news. And I, for one, was disappointed at the lack of cattail news I'd had in my life recently. So now I'm very happy indeed. Let's talk about last week. Last week, of course, we ranked the Spice Girls and hers slowly descended into insanity as more and more songs went on. People loved it, Hurst. People loved the fact that you fucking hated it. I have a worrying foreshadowing that our episodes from now on are just going to be shit we hate because people were all over the Spice Girls episode.
I was literally getting messages from Matt, off of Matt and Laura, friends of the show, saying, I hate you for this. And he sent me a video of Laura dancing to our podcast whilst they were having their dinner. It was a pleasing time. I was like, no, that's joyful. But then she said that my top choice wasn't very good. So I said it wasn't joyful anymore. Anyway, I digress. Tell me the news.
Oh, well, there's some news. One clarification I wanted to make, and I picked this up when I listened to it back and some other people picked it up too. It would appear that I suggested that Sporty Spice is ugly, and I didn't mean to do that. Sporty Spice is clearly not an ugly lady. If you met her in the pub, you'd be like,
"Why?"
Perhaps not to her face, but in your head. And I didn't mean to suggest that. I apologise to Sporty Spice fans. It was just kind of in the book that was kind of talking about her. So, yeah, she's not ugly, and she could do a backflip. So, you know, dope. But obviously she's the good singer. But we won't get into that again because we'll be here all day.
And also it wasn't you that said it, it was Simon Fuller. You were just telling everyone what you'd said.
I was reading it out of the book. Well, I wasn't reading it out of the book, but yes, I was paraphrasing from the book. Yeah. So sorry, Sporties fans. Would you like the results?
Yeah, go on.
All right, we've got some comments first, Hurst. Here's a comment from someone that voted for you. Hello, Rank Kings. Long-time listener, first-time caller, absolutely agree that To Become One was probably the last proper Christmas single. The lovely, lovely song with a wonderful video too. The B-side of the single is a cover of the 1948 piece Sleigh Ride, which was written between February and June. It's an absolute stormer of a recording. Pure joy seeps through with every note. Here ends my knowledge of the all-conquering girl group that I will admit to. Yours, William Preston. So that's nice. That was all the people who left a comment while voting for you. I'm going to choose just a few of the people that left a comment while voting for me. 100% agree about paper straws. Thank you very much. Kovach said the best of a bad bunch was me, but he liked Poswatch, so that's why he voted for me.
Okay.
Our friend Dav Paz, my vote is purely for Spice Up Your Life. I can't bear most of the Spice Girls songs. Also, I had no idea that Jerry was Geraldine. Edutainment. Thanks, Dav Paz. Ross of the Robots says, Squirrel gets my votes this week as Spice Up Your Life is an absolute banger. A great episode, despite there being no mention of Say You'll Be There, which is my favourite Spice Girls song, if only you'd asked. And one more. Hurst is clearly very sexy and talented and funny, but his disdain for the Spice Girls means it would not be appropriate for him to determine the official world rankings. Very handsome and intelligent, though. No name on that one, but I got a funny feeling that I know who might have sent it through.
Probably a lady.
You. It was you.
Hear me with the results. I've got a fairly comfortable feeling of defeat here.
Hurst, you got 15 votes.
Okay. I mean, that's always been a losing score.
Yes, it has. But 15 is frankly far more than you fucking deserve.
No, probably 15 more than I deserve.
I got 25, so get spanked. So that's it. I am a champion. Shall we see if I can do it again?
Let's see if you can.
Let's get ranking.
So, how are we going to decide who goes first this week?
We're going to flip the coin of destiny, Hurst, like we do every week.
Good call.
But how are we going to know which side is which, Hurst?
Well, heads for Hurst, squirrels have tails.
Let's flip this shit. Tails. Squirrels have tails. I'm going first again.
Before we do, we should probably go into the intricacies of what is a remake and what's a reboot and what is a continuation and what's part of a series or a sequel, because it did cause us a little headache this week as we were trying to work out what we could do. And I'd already watched Blade Runner.
Obvious sequel, Blade Runner, yep.
Even though it was like 40 years apart.
This was the gist of our conversation as what is a remake, what is a reboot? And we're covering both today. Basically, what we went with is a remake or a reboot is something in the same medium. So a film being remade into another film or a TV show being remade into another TV show, et cetera, features the same characters, but not necessarily the same cast, I think is where we landed, isn't it? So coming straight in, number five, for me, is Ocean's 11.
Mm.
The original Ocean's 11, with the number 11, not the word 11, was a 1960 film starring a good chunk of the Rat Pack. It had Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. and Peter Lawford. The remake starred George Clooney and Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Andy Garcia, Julia Roberts and Don Cheadle, with perhaps the worst Cockney accent since Dick Van Dyke was in Mary Poppins. It was god-awful.
All right, chaps.
Oh, leave it out. You tossers. You had one job to do.
But the film remained great. Both films involve putting a team together to rob several casinos in one night. Both feature an elaborate plan. Both include someone having a heart attack. The endings are different, though. Spoiler alert for a 65-year-old movie, and I think we're safe on that. In the original, the person that has the heart attack dies. They hide the money in his coffin. But oh no, his widow decides suddenly to have him cremated, and all the money gets burned because crime doesn't pay first.
Yeah.
Not in the 60s. Anyway, the remake is great. It's super stylish. It's lots of fun throughout. Number five, Ocean's 11.
Decent shout. So for me, my number five, I've gone with Gladiators, the TV show. Growing up in the 90s, as we did, Gladiators was just a part of Saturday night. And even as we got a bit older and we started going out and seeing our friends, it was watch Gladiators, get ready, and then go out. It was just a brilliant show then. Brilliant in its own kind of rubbishy way. But it came back last year, the year before possibly, for filming. And Carly and I fulfilled a lifelong ambition to go and see Gladiators filmed live.
You've seen it filmed live?
And yeah, we got the big foam finger and did the pointing and all that. And it was just...
Oh, shit.
It was a long day, in fairness. It's not as slick as it looks.
Well, no, of course.
But it was great fun just being there and just like, yeah, I'm finally part of watching Gladiators and seeing them do their thing. It was fab. So,
do we see you on TV at any point?
No, we can't. But we were in that very first episode where the lads busted his knee. Oh, the little cocky Leeds lad busted his knee in the first episode. That's the episode we were at. So that was good fun. Mm. I just like the new Gladiators as well. They've got new Wolf, who's as rubbish as old Wolf was.
Yeah.
But they've all got a bit more personality going on. So Legend's hilarious. He's so brilliantly arrogant. And then there's Diamond, who's this 6-foot Amazon blonde. It's like, wow, she's just dwarfing all of the opponents. I wouldn't want to come up against her on that duel, let alone if I was a lady who was 5'5". She's great. There's just so many great new Gladiators, and it's good fun. So, yeah, for me, Gladiators number five.
Excellent shout. Didn't even come into my radar, but as soon as you said it, I'm like, no, that's a really good one. And that's at your number five.
Woo. Yeah.
What's the rest of your list going to contain?
Good stuff.
Wow.
Oh, one thing I did want to say, actually, in my notes, one of the things I really love about Gladiators is when they're giving out the stats of the Gladiators and the images of those, like, height, 6'6", wingspan, biceps. 210. And then it's like,
yes.
They'd say that Saber can lift 300 kilos, which is like two motorcycles. Like, that's not a unit of measurement, guys. Jukeboxes, motorcycles, and fridges are not ways we measure things. Anyway, what's your number four?
My number four, Hurst, is Resident Evil 2.
Ooh.
And you may be thinking, wait a minute, that sounds like a sequel. And it is. It's a sequel to Resident Evil 1, but I'm talking about the remake of Resident Evil 2. The original Resident Evil 2 came out in 1997.
Are we talking on the computer?
On the computer, yes. On a PlayStation specifically. Came out in 97, which is, I don't know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. And it was great. It was the sequel to the original Resident Evil, of course, which was a groundbreaking zombie horror game, which everybody loved. And you would shoot the zombies, and it was all very good. The
bloody lickers were evil, weren't they? They were terrifying.
That's right, the lickers.
One of those you walked in, and it was like, oh no, my day just got way worse.
Yes, you have to decide whether you're going to waste like 100 bullets trying to kill it, or just run around it like a pro. Resident Evil 2 was just far bigger in scope and more of a game in every way than Resident Evil 1, and is lauded by many as the best of the series. And then they remade it in 2019, and they remade the original Resident Evil several times with various changes here and there. Resident Evil 2, they just remade it from scratch, and it has largely the same story, but with completely different voice actors, obviously up-to-date graphics, and they fixed the controls. And it was absolutely brilliant, and it sold by the shitload, and it kicked off a remake of the entire series. You got Resident Evil 3, Resident Evil 4, which 3 was okay, 4 was okay, but none were as good as the remake of Resident Evil 2, which is why it is my number four. Lots of numbers in that segment from me.
Yeah, okay, decent. I enjoyed Resident Evil when it was first out. I've not really been massively into it since. So yeah, I haven't really got much to add there. So my number four is The Crow. This is an interesting one because the original Crow is an absolute classic. It's just nonstop boom, vengeance, all sorts of greatness. Just for those who don't know about it, a guy gets brutally murdered and his wife gets murdered and raped and it's all horrific. And then through whatever kind of comic book magic it is, he comes back to life, but he becomes invulnerable except for he's got this crow that is him and it flies around and he sees through its eyes and he goes around and basically destroys, I mean literally, not hyperbole, destroys the entire gang and anyone who's involved in his and his Lady Shelley's demise. And it's brilliant. It's got Guy of Gisborne as the main bad guy off of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And he is brilliant in it. Horrible. And he looks the part. And Brandon Lee, obviously, it was the film he died during filming of, but he was great in it. And the whole thing was fantastic. That's the original Crow. So when they decided they were going to remake it, I was understandably dubious. I really loved the Crow. And I went in wanting to be open-minded with it and give it the benefit of the doubt and say what's happened. And I'm really glad I did. So it was really gritty with a nod here and there to the original, but it stands up as its own film. The characters grow and develop much more. So you get a lot more of the backstory of how Eric and Shelley meet. And it makes a whole lot of sense. So the two of them, the actors have just great chemistry. And it's a really believable, intense, almost Shakespearean romance. And because of the trauma of their backgrounds and where they met and how they met, it makes sense that they would have this crazy, intense romance and fall deeply in love, just like proper Romeo and Juliet shit. And then when they get killed, Eric doesn't immediately become like this badass walking around getting shot. So he really has to grow into it because he feels the pain being shot. It just doesn't kill him. And so he doesn't go straight into this instant badass. He has to develop into it. And it's much more realistic in that respect. You see him struggling with the whole, ow, that really hurts, but I've got to get vengeance, until ultimately he turns full badass and it's just wonderful. So I loved it for that. Yeah, it was just a really great film. If you haven't seen it, I'd definitely recommend it. The Crow. He's a good Eric. Did it justice.
All right. Well, that could be a top five face-off world exclusive. I think we found the one person that didn't absolutely hate the remake of The Crow.
Really? You've seen it and hated it?
Everybody saw it and hated it. Everybody.
Really? I loved it.
Critics and viewers alike. It's sitting on less than 4 out of 10 on IMDb, 21% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Guardian called it unfathomably awful.
I'm amazed. I really enjoyed it for all the reasons I've just said. I loved it.
It's your list.
If everyone agrees with The Guardian and all of that, then you're looking at back to back this week.
Oh yes, thanks for handing me the win on this one.
I'm really surprised. I wasn't expecting anything from it, and I thought it was a really good backstory, different way of looking at it. Anyway, what's your number three?
My number three is another video game. My number three is the remake of Final Fantasy VII. The original Final Fantasy VII was out in 1997, which we decided was about 7 years ago, right? And it brought Japanese role-playing games to the Western world. If you don't like long films and you don't like long computer games, you're not going to like Final Fantasy, because it's around 100 hours to get to the end, unless you really, really run for it. It was just superb. You had tiny little polygon people who made you have feelings and stuff. And the story was good, and everything about it was brilliant. People have been crying out for a remake of Final Fantasy VII for many, many years now. And in 2015, which, you know, must be minus 11 years ago.
A couple of weeks back.
Or 11 years into the future. they finally announced that they were going to remake it. Hurst, I'm going to show you a bit of a video.
Okay.
Which I will put in as audio for our rankers. This is 2015's E3 show, the press conference industry show for the announcement of new computer games and things like that. So these are all professionals in the audience, Hurst. Have a watch of this. This is the point in the trailer where it kind of pans back and it becomes obvious that it is going to be a remake of Final Fantasy VII, because the two characters that you see from behind have very distinct weaponry. Professionals cheering like school children.
I didn't really see what the weapons were. All I saw was a remake. I was like, okay, lots of screaming and remake.
Lots of screaming from games industry professionals who were there to watch, you know, boring industry stuff. it was huge. And then it took another 5 years till it came out in 2020, which is, you know, about 7 years ago. It was incredible. They did it. There was a lot of worry because they said, we're not remaking the whole game, actually. We're just going to remake the first bit up to when you leave the initial city, which in the original game takes about 8 hours, I guess. And they said, it's going to take you about 40 hours to get through. And we're like, what mess are they padding this stuff out with? Nah. They smashed it out of the goddamn park. It's brilliant. It's a very clever retelling of the same story with some key differences that make huge differences, and it's just immense, and I loved every bit of it, and it looks glorious. You should love it too, everybody. Go play the original for 100 hours, then go play Final Fantasy VII Remake, then go play the interlude, then go play the sequel to Final Fantasy VII Remake, and that'll take you about, I don't know, 400 hours, and every single one of them will be a lot more fun than watching The Crow 2025.
2024.
I apologize.
But get it right, the Malcolms would be on you.
Wow.
Yeah, I think fair enough. I remember playing, I think it was probably Final Fantasy VII or something. I played one when it was little bitty graphics, and I did play it for a very long time. No, I tried one of the remakes, I just didn't care. I haven't gone back to Final Fantasy VII yet. I might give it a look, but there's a few other things I want to play first. Yeah, I don't have the same thing with computer games as I do with movies, because I can stop playing them after an hour and go, right, I've had enough now. Whereas with a movie, that's not really how they work. Otherwise, it's just a TV show.
Brilliant.
But interestingly, this is one where there might be some controversy as well because of this whole mixed media thing, but I'm going for it because it's based on acting on screen.
All right.
My number three is Reacher. Now,
all right, no,
yeah, so that is a remake, not from the book. I mean, it is based on the book, obviously, but I see the Reacher franchise as a remake from when Tom Cruise did it a few years back. Now, much as we love Tom Cruise films, as I'm sure our regular anchors will understand, and as many great facts as we've got about Tom Cruise and the films and what bands he might have been in, he was never cut out to be Reacher. The diminutive actor, 4'11", was never going to be the 6'5", muscular behemoth, just wrecking machine. Yeah, see, things like bananas, yeah.
And like rotisserie chickens.
He was always described as like this enormous dude. Tom Cruise goes, yeah, I like that. Yeah. I could be him. And whilst the films weren't that bad, it never felt like Reacher.
No.
Enter Amazon Prime and Alan Richardson as Reacher, and holy shit snacks. It has been epic. It's only 8 episodes per series, which is just right for it. You don't want it to go on and on, but it's long enough that, I mean, it's almost an 8-hour movie if you watched it as that, which I would. But I found myself just like each week, Carly would say, like, is Reacher out yet? I was like, oh, no, not yet. I haven't had that in so long with any kind of show where I'm desperately waiting for the day that it comes out so I can watch it. And they've done 3 series of it now, and every series has been really nicely done in terms of how it reflects on the book and how accurate it is to the book. I like that they've brought much more of Neely in. I think they've maybe brought her in more than she is in the book. She does turn up a few times, but they've made her quite a character, and I understand there's going to be a spin-off now. Future potential top 5 rankings of spin-offs.
Let us know, patrons.
And it sounds like Alan Richardson's going to make cameos in that as well, so it'll be a really nice overlap, a bit sort of Buffy and Angel, but, you know, much more gritty and badass. So, yeah, I've absolutely loved those, and I think he's a tremendous Reacher, and I just keep going. So, yeah, for me, Alan Richardson's Reacher, number 3.
All right, I'm not going to argue about whether or not it is a remake. That is up for the rankers to decide. No denying it's fucking brilliant, and no denying that Fad Castle is an excellent goddamn Reacher.
Yeah, good old Fad.
What was that, your number 3?
So that's my number 3, yeah.
So it must be time for my number 2. Now, I wrestled over this one, Hurst. Was this going to be my number 2, or was it going to be my number 1? It was so close, because I love this so much. One of my very favorite reboots in the world. Certainly my favorite TV reboot was the new reimagined, it wasn't rebooted or remade, apparently it was reimagined, but it's clearly a remake, of Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
Oh my God. I love it so much. Oh my God. I could already hear someone I know going, oh, they're all so moany. Shut up, Craster. You're an idiot. Battlestar Galactica is fantastic. Anyway, the original Galactica came out in 1978, the same as we did. Yay.
Decent.
That was about 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
It starred Dirk Benedict as Starbuck, Dirk Benedict being Face Man from the 80s. It ran for 34 episodes and then got reimagined, air quotes, in 2003 by Ronald D. Moore, who did Star Trek DS9, and David Icke, who did Xena Warrior Princess. And they just made this sci-fi, oh God, it's so good, I can't even talk about it. They made this operatic sci-fi juggernaut, which lasted for 76 episodes and was just amazing. And it had espionage and courtroom drama and political shit and massive space battles and, oh my Christ, I love it so much. And it's interesting what you were saying about Reacher, because I had the same thing with Galactica, because it was like the last thing I actually watched on TV. It was on Sky One. And so you'd have to wait for the next episode each week. And then you'd have to wait a whole year on a cliffhanger to see what was going to happen between series. Ridiculousness. So good. It was so goddamn good. And I love it to pieces. And it's so smart and so clever. And it's funny and it's fun. And yeah, they're all moaning, but that's because genocide, for God's sake, Craster.
Genocide's bad, okay.
Galactica, number two, amazing. Hey, Hurst, what's your number two?
My number two is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Ooh, yes.
For those who are like, hang on, is that a reboot? It's, yes, it is. It was originally a 1964 film called Bedtime Story, and the co-writers Stanley Shapiro and Paul Henning received screen credit for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, along with writer Dale Lautner. So it is a reboot or a remake of a different named film, and was also then remade again, which we'll come back to. So Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is basically these two con men who happen to meet on the train, Freddie Benson and Lawrence Jameson, and it's just so funny. So some of the best physical comedy you'll ever see from Steve Martin, especially when he's being a Ruprecht, the monkey boy. His physical comedy is so good, and that film really shows it. But it's the idea that these two guys, you've got the suave Brit, Lawrence Jameson, played by Michael Caine, who is casually conning rich women out of masses of money in Beaumont-sur-Mer, and then this young pretender on the train sidles up doing his short cons and ends up being in Beaumont-sur-Mer and saying, well, like, if I'm going to blab if you don't teach me how to do what you're doing. And it's just their relationship with each other is fantastic. It's just, there's little bits about it that are really funny. So right at the beginning, when you're seeing Michael Caine doing his first con on this lady, he's pretending to be royalty in a war-torn country. And Lady Fanny of Omaha, who's a rich lady from Omaha, she accidentally, inverted commas, overhears them talking, and she wants to come and help. And it's Michael Caine and his police chief that he's got on the payroll had to overhear them talking about his struggle and his war-torn country and his financial difficulties. And they're pretending not. And she wants to know. And they're like, no, I can't tell you about that. She says, please tell me. And every time they talk to her in hushed tones, they grab her and shove her into this little shrubbery and talk to her in hushed tones. And she goes and talks to the next one. He grabs her and shoves her into this same bush. So she just keeps on getting manhandled into a bush so they could secretly talk amongst the leaves. And it's just brilliant comedy right from the start. The Freddie Benson character, he just comes up with this great line as well when he's talking about his poorly grandma, Grammy, who's ill in hospital. He's just trying to get some money for her in his shortcut. And he says, Grammy always says, it's better to be truthful and kind than to not. It's just twatty little lines like that, which are just, it's just genius all the way through. And yeah, at the end of it, it's one of the great movie twists happening at the end of the thing. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. If you haven't seen it, you just have to watch Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. It's like 1984 or something.
Go see it, Rankers. Yeah,
watch it and just enjoy the juxtaposition of the suave Brit and the leery American and their dynamic as they work together to try and, they have a competition to swindle this one lady, and it's just hilarious. Number two, and it did bother the top spot, but it was my number two, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
There you go. Directed by your boy Kermit the Frog, right?
Frank yes, Oz it was. Directed. It was directed by Dirty Rotten Scoundrels,
yes. All right, so that's 5-2 from both of us. And before we reveal our top ranking film in remakes and reboots, it's time for the worst film. And nearly all of this week, I thought I was going to be talking about the live-action remake of The Lion King, which just made me insane when I sat in the cinema watching it for the 9.5 hours it went on with Beyonce warbling away like a kid. But I'm not. And I'm going to play some backing music, Hurst. And as soon as it starts, I suspect you know what I'm going to talk about.
Okay. Now I hear
What am I going to talk about, Hurst?
Dirty Dancing, perchance.
They remade Dirty Dancing, Hurst.
Oh,
they remade Dirty Dancing. They took Dirty Goddamn Dancing, which for many, many people is one of their defining films of their childhood, my wife included. That came out in 87. I don't need to tell you about Dirty Dancing in 87. You know all about it, because of course you do, because it was a phenomenon. It was remade in 2017, Hurst. And Jesus fuck, what did they do? It was bad. Where do we start with how they fucked this up? Let's start with the leads. So you had Abigail Breslin. She was Olive, the little girl in Little Miss Sunshine. Can clearly act, but forgot how at some point, because in this, god awful. She was baby, she was shit. A guy called Colt Prats, who you don't know from anything, because no one knows him from anything. He was Johnny Castle, and he was shit. Every line was delivered badly. So you've got bad acting for people you don't really know. Get this, they can't really dance. He's really good. She clearly tries real hard, but is just not a good dancer. And they're cutting the camera so many times you start to feel ill just to try and hide the fact that she just cannot dance. So you've got Dirty Dancing, a film all about dancing, where the leads can't dance together very well. They have no chemistry whatsoever. They've taken one of the greatest films of many people's lives and turned it into utter trash. Do you know what else they did, Hurst?
I shudder to think.
Oh, they made it a musical.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus, indeed, Hurst. So rather than having the songs playing in the film, the characters sang the songs whilst they were badly dancing. It was so bad. It was so bad.
That does sound awful.
Yes. Yes.
They had no business remaking it, especially not with someone who can't dance and singing the songs.
It is practically unbelievable. It is incredible in just how badly they fucked it. So yeah, the worst film, Dirty Dancing.
For my worst, I was leaning towards The Hustle, which is a lady remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. To the point that it's the same story set in Beaumont-sur-Mer. It's like, what in the wide world of fuck are you doing trying to remake Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? But at least I kind of got through that one. So that had to be usurped by a film that Carly and I together only managed to watch 15 minutes of before we had to turn it off.
Oh dear.
Because it was utter, utter drivel and shite. And that is Doolittle, featuring the wildly talented Robert Downey Jr. We managed 15 minutes of his, I want to say, Welsh, South African, American, maybe Indian accent. We never really figured out what accent he was trying to do, but it wasn't working, and it just ended up making us so angry we couldn't watch it. It was literally unwatchable, that one. And I thought, well, I mean, I haven't seen the whole film. Is it fair to write it off based on not being able to get through 15 minutes? And first of all, I decided, yeah, it is anyway. If a film's that bad, then it's that bad. But just to be sure, I read a review.
Okay.
If anyone went back and looked at this thing, they would find a garbage dump of poop jokes, fart jokes, itchy butt jokes, talking animals, wonky CGI, and Downey going so big and broad, he makes Johnny Depp's Captain Jack Sparrow look like an introvert. That's a good hour and a half I've saved myself. I owe myself a big one for just turning that crap off. So, yeah, do little, do one.
Fair enough. Haven't seen it. Ain't gonna.
Yeah, you mustn't.
Get excited, rankers. Here comes our number one. So, what could possibly beat Battlestar Galactica? I know you're all shouting, except for Craster, the idiot. What could beat Battlestar Galactica is the best reboot that exists, and it is Mad Max Fury Road.
Hmm.
God, I love Mad Max Fury Road. Oh, Fury Road is so freaking good. Let's talk about the original. The original Mad Max obviously starred Mel Gibson, came out in 1979. It was that long ago, Hurst. It was 8 years ago. Had two sequels in 81 and 85, which were both 7 years ago. It was a post-apocalyptic film in which oil was scarce and Max was an ex-policeman. And he drives this cool, specially built Super Pursuit V8 special, and it's excellent. But when his partner Goose gets killed...
No.
That sounds familiar. By a motorcycle gang, Max takes some time off you know, rather than do police work, I guess, and goes on holiday with his family. But oh no, the same motorcycle gang attack his family. They kill his daughter. They leave his wife in a coma. Max goes on a rampage to get the bikers. Brilliant. In the 2014 reboot, it starts off with Max and he's captured by a cult leader and he escapes and he ends up in the war rig, which has been stolen from Immortan Joe, who is the bad guy, by a lady called Furiosa, who has also kidnapped five of Joe's wives. Ah, when Joe finds out, he gets very, very cross indeed, and he sends his war boys chase after the war rig in various insane vehicles and bring it back. 2 hours, dead on, so it's dead on the limit for your movie, Hurst.
Yeah.
Balls to the wall action. It's ridiculous. The amount of stuntman killing special things they must have done. Excellent. They're all practical. It wasn't all practical. It was mostly practical. There are cars falling over. There are people on poles bending backwards and forwards. There's, oh, I love it so much. I love it so much. I watch it, and every time I watch it, I'm very happy and I clap my hands because I'm so happy. Then Doof Warrior arrives. Doof Warrior is the best person in the film era. Doof Warrior is a bad guy. He's strapped to the front of a truck. All he does is play his electric guitar. All that's on his truck is speakers. And he's got this electric guitar. He's like, and you're like, this is the coolest guy ever. This is the coolest guy ever. What's going to happen with the coolest guy ever? I'll tell you what happens. Hurst, his guitar turns into a flamethrower. Oh my God. That's so good. Oh my God. Don't bang the table, Squirrel. It's so good. Oh. Fury Road is one of my very favourite things, and also annoyed the incels. Oh, it's all about the woman. It's not really about Max. Don't give a fuck, incels. Get over yourselves. This film's amazing. Shut up. Go somewhere else where your kind is tolerated. Oh, Mad Max, Fury Road. Just so goddamn good. First, would you like a fact and an estimated fact about Mad Max, Fury Road?
You know I would.
Have you seen Mad Max, Fury Road?
It is very, very good.
Okay, good. So you know that, fact, Charlize Theron was bald in the movie, but actually couldn't be bald in real life because she was also filming A Million Ways to Die in the West at the same time, so they had to make her bald digitally.
Ooh.
Or, fact, Max only has 52 lines in Fury Road.
Gosh, I don't really remember it very well. I was quite drunk, and it was a couple of years ago, so...
Watch it again.
I couldn't tell you if he did or not. That does seem more likely. I feel like they could always put a wig on her if they needed to for a different film. Like if she was legit bald, they could get her a wig and have whatever hair she wants. I'm going to say that the fact is that Max only had 52 lines.
Hurst, you've nailed this so hard, it's in the wall and it's not coming out.
Yes.
Because not only did you get it right, but she did have to wear a wig for A Million Ways to Die in the West because she was bald from Mad Max Fury Road.
Outstanding. Well done, me.
God. Damn good work, Hurst.
Exciting.
Small round of applause. Hit me with your number one while you're on a roll.
My number one will be no surprise to you at all, I would imagine, because I have been bestowing the virtues of this TV show, little spoiler, for years, and eventually you decided to watch it, and you binged it harder than I've ever known anyone to binge anything. I think you got through like four seasons in 2 or 3 days or something. It was
2 days.
It
I
was
think,
bonkers. Yeah. And I approved of it. I didn't approve of the fact that you didn't then see it through because it just actually kept getting better as well. I watched the finale this week again just to, you know, give myself that extra boost. It's one of the best finales of anything that's ever been on, as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, this is opinion until I get voted in. Oh, brazen confidence.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Although the crow feels like it might have screwed me, but fuck it, I don't care. I loved it. It's The Office. The Office is my number one. The American workplace reboot of the UK Office. I liked the UK Office, but it was just a bit too cringy, whereas the American one had a lot of cringe, but at the same time, it built up the relationships. And that's easier to do when you have a season of 20 to 24 episodes rather than 6 episodes. You can really build the characters up. And yeah, they're shorter, but that makes it easy to binge because they're 20-minute episodes and you can just plow through them. But it's just... It's able to find humour and relatable moments in the mundane wankiness. It showcases the beauty in ordinary people because no one in there is pop star or movie star beautiful. They've cast regular people, some of whom are pretty, some of whom are not. And it's people in everyday life. It's like when you go to work, you're forced to socialise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're working, but you're forced to be in a situation
yep.
with people that you wouldn't normally. And that creates interesting relationships and dynamics of its own. But also sometimes you find lifelong friends in the workplace. Just so happened that Hurst and Squirrel were forged in the fires of the office.
That's true. So yes, indeed. We met in an office.
We did, and bonded over energy drinks and shared love of Top Gun donuts. And donuts and things. I like that it's a paper company. It's an uninspiring office in an uninspiring town full of largely uninspiring characters, but they're just funny together. And whilst the romance of Jim and Pam throughout it is deemed to be one of the wonderful TV romances, to be honest, for me it was all about the romance between Dwight and Jim, the pranks, the rivalry, the ups and downs, that ultimately and really slowly just it turned into a genuine friendship, which is what I love so much about that final episode. It's not like they're kind of slapping each other's back saying, oh, we're mates, but you can see their friends, that the interactions they have and that, how it finishes. And there's some amazing cameos. Obviously, as it got bigger, it became one of the massive shows in America. You had cameos from Bill Hader, Will Ferrell, Jim Carrey, Bob Odenkirk. Dakota Johnson was in the last episode. Idris Elba, Christian Slater, Amy Adams, Timothy Oliphant. James Spader was in it for a while as Robert California.
Obviously, he was the best one.
Hilarious. But even the minor characters are brilliant. So people like Meredith and Creed, Kevin Mose, the weird cousin, Todd Packer, Bob Vance, just like the little cameos that popped in here and there. They just all made it so much more authentic. Because you have got the kind of weird, boring people that you don't know in the office, but you suspect they're a bit of a Meredith or, more importantly, a Creed. The whole thing is just so beautifully shot, pulled together in the final episode. And also in that last episode, one of the quotes of the century for me came from Andy Bernard as he's talking to the camera about, oh, he's had this journey of being an unfortunate internet celebrity and then kind of getting through it and learning from it. And he says, if only there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you've actually left them. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's something we should all be thinking about more, that, yeah, these are the good old days, and but you won't know it until 10 years' time. You're like, shit, I missed this, that, and the other. So it's brilliant. So I love The Office. You could easily skip season one because it is largely just a rewrite of the UK Office using the same jokes. It's not really found its feet, but everything from season two onwards, every season is brilliant. Even when Steve Carell leaves, they managed to still make it brilliant. But that's because American comedy writers are, you know, clever like that. So, would you like your fact and estimated fact?
Ooh, yes, I would.
Okay. Fact. Phyllis Smith, who plays Phyllis, was on the beauty pageant circuit as a child. Fact. John Krasinski, who played Jim, originally auditioned to play Dwight.
I already got in trouble for suggesting that a lady was not attractive in our last episode, but I'm going to do it again. She's not bothering any beauty pageants, no matter how old she is. So I'm going to say that Jim originally auditioned to be Dwight. So that is my guess.
Phyllis is ugly as well as Sporty Spice.
No, never said. Am I right, Hurst?
Yes, you're right. She was not troubling the beauty pageant circuit as a child.
Excellent. So, there's our top fives. Do you agree? Well, you obviously agree with one of us, because one of us is always right. But which one of us do you agree with the most? How can they share this with us, Hurst?
I would suggest that they go on to the website and get voting, the website of top5faceoff.co.uk.
Should we find out what they're going to be ranking next week?
Let's do that. Let's hope it's not something hateful that I'm going to have to put myself through.
Hurst, can you see the Wheel of Decision?
Oh, boy, can I.
All right. Anything on there catching your eye as it spins round, Hurst?
The TV theme tunes I quite like, because I've used to play a game where I'd play TV theme tunes to people and they'd have to guess what they were, and it was a bit of a competition. So I like TV theme tunes. I like the idea of big man action movies as well. That's quite cool.
Yes.
Have we got, 90s video games. I'd like that one too.
Should we give it a spin?
Go on, spin it.
Here it goes. Oh, what's it going to be? It's musicals. Musicals.
So, Dirty Dancing remake.
I might have the same words twice in a row. That'd be a first, but we'll find out.
So a movie musical is one where they sing in it, isn't it?
Yes. So, for instance, Pitch Perfect would not be a movie musical because the singing makes sense. But a musical is where the singing is ridiculousness.
Out of context, right.
Yes, like if you suddenly start singing I've Had the Time of My Life at the end of Dirty Dancing.
I've got other things to watch this week. I've got more movie homework.
Well, we do have some movie musical homework. Oh, that's going to be really interesting. Until then, rankers, if you want to buy some excellent paintings on the internet, where can you go, Hurst?
Dockhouseart.co.uk.
Lovely. And if you want to see me and Hurst ranking energy drinks, you can hop on to our Insta or our TikTok account, which is Hurst?
Energy Drink Video Review.
Excellent. If you want to catch this podcast on the socials, we are on Blue Sky and Facebook, Top 5 Face Off. And you can email us hello@top5faceoff.co.uk. If you love us, tell your friends and leave a review. If you hate us, tell your friends and don't leave a review. Thanks, rankers. Please rewind this podcast for the next person to come along, and we will see you next week with movie musicals.
See you later, rankers. Love you.
Bye, rankers.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Cool. Speaking about... No, we weren't speaking about... What were we speaking about?
I don't know. We were speaking about getting to the point, don't we?
Get excited, rankers. Here comes our number one.
And every time they talk to us... Brilliant.
Who's at the door, Hurst?
One moment.
Now, is it the... Oh, wow. Yeah, I forget what that is. Amazon. Amazon!
Fucking Amazon.
What did you get?
Not even for me, I don't think. Right. Anyway. That was shit. Cramp in my hamstrings. Oh, sweet Lord.
Stop having cramp, Hurst. I'm about to ask you if you want a fact or an involuntary fact. No, not involuntary fact.
Okay. Yeah, give us the involuntary one. Yeah, give us some facts, Squirrel.
I was going to do that bit again, Hurst, because I said involuntary.
So, how are we going to decide who goes first this week?
We're going to flip the coin of decision, Hurst, as every week.
Are we going to flip the coin of destiny?
Fuck. Top 5 Face Off.